From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Oregon is about as far away as you can get from Washington, D.C. in the continental United States. But as we've all seen lately, nowhere is far enough away to escape intervention and interference from the federal government. Currently, the Trump administration has its sights on the election processes of states like Oregon, and they're trying to change our voting systems in ways that could disenfranchise many Oregonians. Today on the show, you'll hear from the person in charge of our elections, Secretary of State Tobias Reid, and hear how he plans on fighting back. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear from the Oregon Food Bank, which is suffering through federal cuts of their own that could have drastic impacts on those who desperately need food assistance in every corner of the state. That's next on Oregon on the Record. The integrity of elections has become a massive flashpoint in America over the past couple of decades. And the people who run elections have to weather the slings and arrows of citizens, pundits, and even elected officials themselves. Today on the show, you'll hear from our top election official and hear how he and his team plan on keeping Oregon elections for Oregonians. Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reid, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, you've obviously seen this new executive order from President Donald Trump calls for changing the elections, including new identity verification and vote by mail. As Secretary of State, I wanted to get your take on this executive order.
Well, I think we should start with the recognition that Oregon already runs fair and secure elections. And I think this executive order will only serve to make that harder. And will only make it harder for citizens to exercise their fundamental right to hold politicians accountable at the ballot box. It really is a threat to that right and to our responsibility as states to run those fair and secure elections. If we want to improve the security of elections, we should be focused on helping the county elections officials across Oregon and across the country and ensuring that every eligible American voter can vote with paper ballots on their own time in ways that fit in complicated, busy lives.
Okay. In the particulars of what the Trump administration is calling for with this executive order, how would that, in your opinion, sort of gum up the works and make it less secure?
Well, if we think about what's actually here, the non-viable solutions that or requirements that this executive order contains, they're not workable. They wouldn't have the effect that they purport to have. They would impose significant burdens on people who don't deserve that. Mm-hmm. Think about the fact that a significant number of people, 9% by the estimate of the Brennan Center, don't have access to the documents that are required here. The fact that a vast majority of women who get married in this country choose to change their names and would put difficulty in front of them if they don't have documentary evidence that matches the name on their birth certificate. People who live in rural parts of the state who would have to make their way to elections offices, all of those things don't help. And to make things worse, if a state doesn't bend to the president's whims on this, the kinds of funding that really do make differences, security cameras, physical security of those elections officials, those dollars are threatened as well. It's a pattern, frankly, if you think about what this administration has done in reducing the capacity of CISA and those dollars. This is not the direction we should be going.
Yeah. From your perspective, you know, especially, you know, Oregon has been a leader in a lot of different things around voting, first to do 100% mail-in voting. You know, from your perspective, how safe are safe and secure and free are Oregon elections?
Very. And I appreciate you pointing out the fact that we have been doing elections this way for a very long time, 25 years, in fact. I make the point sometimes to people in Oregon and around the country that saying vote by mail even is a little bit misleading because you don't have to use the mail. If you don't feel good about that, you can pick up a ballot from the county elections office. You don't have to mail it back. You can drop it off at the elections office or in a drop box. The point here is to make it convenient for people. But what we have in Oregon is something that a lot of other people would like to have: paper ballots verified by signature that are traceable, that are auditable. These are the things that we should be talking about, and we should be working to make sure that everyone has access to that.
Obviously, the Trump administration inaccurately and untruthfully said the 2020 election was fraudulent. And I'm wondering, you know, do you kind of, how do you square the fact with what that rhetoric was to what this action is? You know, how do you see it from where you sit?
Well, I see this as an opportunity for us to have conversations about how our elections actually work. They are administered by elections officials in counties across the state and across the country. In Oregon, there's 36 of them. I'm in the process of visiting them all. And the Constitution says very clearly it is the states who regulate elections. Counties administer them. States regulate them. The Congress can do that when they pass a law, but it's a law, not an executive order. So I think it's, I'm looking for a silver lining here, but if we've prompted a conversation with people about how elections work, that's a good thing. What we should be focused on is reality, not the conspiracies and concerns of people who are not connected to reality.
We reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reid. You know, I'm wondering too, you know, obviously there's been a lot of executive orders. There's been a lot of court interaction and intervention in that. What's your feeling about what Oregon and other states might do with regard to this executive order through the court system?
Well, we are certainly going to be using every tool that's available to us to make sure that we are defending the fundamental right of Oregonians and Americans to hold politicians accountable. I've been in regular conversation with Attorney General Dan Rayfield. I know there are lots of other legal challenges being contemplated to this executive order, and I think we will absolutely make that case as clearly and as fervently as we can.
From kind of more of a philosophical question, can you kind of explain why it appears as though this administration, but other administrations, other Republicans have seemingly tried to make voting harder? Why do you think that's the case for some people in kind of looking at elections?
It is a philosophical question, and I think it's a hard one to answer. I think anytime someone who's involved in electoral politics gets started, they have to get comfortable with the idea that they may not win. But if we can focus on a system that allows people to say, you know, I was able to make my case, I was heard, even if I don't like the outcome, that's, I think, the best standard to which we can aspire. It's not. This of late, these cases tend to be made more by Republicans right now. But what worries me the most is that we can see that from the side that is unsuccessful in any given election. It doesn't have to be a Republican side. When someone loses, we want them to say, you know, I better convince more people, not the election was unfair or corrupt.
Yeah. Could you remind folks what happens in a close in Oregon? What happens in a close election if, you know, it's so close? Can you talk about how our recount system works and what are the precautions to make sure that every vote is counted so that at the end of whatever period of time it is, we know for sure candidate X won and candidate Y lost?
Well, it starts well before that. The first thing is having paper ballots that are signature verified makes a really big difference. And this is something that is handled at every county. As I said, I've visited a lot of these counties and in the process of visiting them all. They have very robust processes that verify those signatures and verify voter intent. Not everyone follows the directions perfectly, Michael. Some
Sure.
people color outside the lines or put an X instead of filling in the bubble. And these bipartisan election boards who discern voter intent are there, and all manner of careful processes are in place to make sure that the number of ballots that go in or the number of votes that are counted, and we take our time. Part of this, you know, I love your help on this, is making sure that people have a realistic assessment of how long that process takes. We get into a lot of trouble when media reports preliminary returns as if they were final. We've heard the president and others say, well, we were leading and then we weren't. Well, that's because that's what ballots had been counted to that point. So we have to change our expectation about getting it right being more important than getting it fast. And where there are statutory requirements for recounts when margins are within a certain threshold, and we follow those as required. But fundamentally, a system that is as robust and specific as the way we have designed it in Oregon should give people lots of confidence that that things are counted, that that the election outcomes reflect voter preference. And I think we should be focused on making sure that more people participate, because for as proud as we are and should be of leading the nation in voter turnout, that's in the 75% range. So there's still 25% of people who are choosing not to participate. And I want to focus on making sure that people have the trust, we've earned their trust, so that they do participate, because we are a stronger and better state when everybody is participating.
You know, last year there was that issue with, I think it was the DMV that improperly Yes. registered 1,600 people. Give us a status on that. How did your office kind of work within that to make sure that, you know, everything was sort of parceled out correctly?
Right. So this is a good example of where there's a difference between a good policy and bad execution. So I believe it is a good policy to make it convenient for eligible people to vote, but that was not handled well. And the governor made the choice to pause that policy in the fall of last year. We insisted on a number of changes to the process to make sure that those errors, when they occur, are caught more quickly. Because, of course, anytime there is data and humans interacting, errors can occur. We want to make sure that we are finding them, that we are correcting them, and that we're changing the processes to keep them from happening. So at the Secretary of State's office, we're hiring a person whose sole focus is on that program to match a similar person at the DMV. We now have a control file that comes with every data transmission from the DMV. We have a system of random sampling that causes selection of records to go back for double and triple checking. We have a regular schedule where people from our office, both in the election side and the audit side, accompanied by county clerks, will visit DMV offices to make sure that the changes to the process the DMV has implemented are continuing beyond this immediate period. And these very much are, in my view, the floor. We will continue to look for ways to add rigor and regular scrutiny to this. So we're not letting go of it, and we're taking it very seriously.
You've talked several times about, you know, having a paper record of your ballot. I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, this idea of what's kind of the right sort of marriage between, you know, I guess for lack of a better phrase, old school tabulation like paper ballots and utilizing technology in order to record a vote. I know that sometimes people get a little nervous about technology and making sure that, you know, fraud doesn't occur. What is kind of that in your eye running elections? What is that sort of good marriage between, you know, analog and digital, if you were?
Yeah, it very much depends on the person and who we're talking about. So I think for individual voters, a paper ballot is the simplest. You as a voter get to see where your pen goes, and you can see the evidence of it after the fact. That stands in stark contrast to stories you probably heard about electronic voting machines in other states, and that's, I think, a lot of the reason why a lot of states have moved away from those electronic voting machines. But it is also true that a person hand counting thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of paper ballots is prone to error. So the marriage that we have, I think, of analog individual voting paired with systems that aggregate the counts of those ballots is good. But that's not the end of the story, because we have a regular system of audits, of risk limiting audits, of audits that are randomly selected across elections and across Oregon to make sure that those things are done well. There are regular and public mechanisms to test and demonstrate the technology that does that tabulation. So it's a thoughtful question, and I think we're always seeking the balance that allows individual people to have the experience that they are confident in, and one that does not allow for human error on that larger scale.
Okay. Secretary, my last question for you is really this, maybe it's another philosophical question, but it seems like from the Trump administration, there's this bit of sort of pick and choose between, oh, I think the state should handle this, and now I think the federal government should handle that. And so they've said, well, the education should be handled at the state level, but now it seems like they're trying to obviously go into the election system. I kind of wanted to, you know, get your opinion. I think you've stated it, but just perhaps, you know, put a bow on it. This idea of a state like Oregon knows how to do elections.
Well, yeah, I think what I can speak on confidently is the election system in Oregon, and I think it is very good. We are always looking for ways to improve things, but I think the Constitution is really clear about states having the authority to run and regulate elections. If Congress wants to step in, they can do so, but they need to do that through a law. The president does not have that ability.
Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reid, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you.
The Oregon Food Bank is a critical part of feeding those in need from urban to rural Oregon, but surprise federal cuts are making that job harder and harder. Matt Newell-Ching, the Oregon Food Bank's Senior Manager of Public Policy, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael.
Yeah. Why don't you give our listeners sort of a brief overview of what the food bank does, you know, who it serves, where you operate, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So Oregon Food Bank is part of a statewide network of over 1,200 partner agencies, and partner agencies, your listeners probably are thinking about like a food pantry or a free food market or a meal site. Many of these are run by volunteers. These are incredible efforts at a community level to address the problem of hunger in each of our communities. And so our network serves 1,200 of these community-based food pantries, meal sites, programs. Last year, we distributed over 91 million meals.
Wow.
That's nearly 110 million pounds of food, which is really a significant effort. That's a big team effort, right? It takes every, you know, community. It's participation from like the public sector, from the state and the federal, you know, government as well.
How are you funded?
Yeah, so we are the primary way we're funded is through the generous support of members of our communities.
Recently, there've been stories about federal cuts that might be coming,
yeah,
and they might impact organizations such as yours. Boy, can you kind of explain to our listeners what that impact might be to what you do?
Yeah, so this is a real challenge. You know, I mentioned just now the support of community members. We also receive support from the federal government. And I won't go too deep into the details, but essentially it works. The federal government enters into, you know, contracts with food producers, with farmers to purchase food that then becomes available to our nationwide network of food banks. And so there's Oregon Food Bank here in Oregon, but around the country, there are over 200 food banks that serve, sometimes it's entire states, sometimes it's regions. And so then, you know, it's kind of like an ordering system. So for example, like sometimes it's chicken or tuna or, you know, cranberries, or I mean, it can be any number of things. And so that's a stream that we are really grateful to participate in. However, we learned in January that about 30 truckloads of food that we had ordered, that we had actually anticipated arriving in our statewide warehouse this month in April, were canceled. And that just came out of the blue. We didn't see a memo from USDA. It was just we actually had to go on the website to look and see, okay, wow, like these are no longer available for order now. And realizing that, you know, we had projected that we would probably have about 60 additional truckloads of food, you know, into the summer months. And so this is a pretty big disruption. All told, the stream of funding that appears to have been eliminated by USDA accounted for about 18% of the food that we received in 2024. So that's about 1 in 6 pounds of food that comes through our statewide warehouse. So that's a pretty big disruption. To put that in perspective, that's about 1.4 million pounds of food. And so we are really, we're working hard to make that up. And we're also raising awareness about this because, it's going to take community support. We also want to raise awareness with our elected leaders because they're the ones that oversee how these programs operate in real life. And, you know, at a time when so many folks are struggling to afford food, we struggle to understand.
There's a narrative that government is inefficient. And so I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about how organizations like yourself that rely on governmental funding, how you increase efficiency in your delivery and in your overall operations. Because I think that's a story that doesn't get talked about enough.
One of the most efficient federal programs in terms of the amount of money that goes directly to participants and minimizes the share of money that goes toward bureaucracy is the SNAP program, formerly food stamps. Over 90% of the money that's appropriated to the SNAP program ends up directly in the hands of people who go to the grocery store and can purchase the foods that they need to purchase. Part of the reason that I do the work that I do is, my family was participating in SNAP when my mom was in a car accident, hit hard times, and, couldn't work. And so SNAP was there for my family when we needed it. It's currently available for over 770,000 people in Oregon. 1 in 6 Oregonians participate in the SNAP program.
Matt Newell-Ching, he is the Oregon Food Bank's Senior Manager of Public Policy. Really appreciate your taking time to talk with us.
Hey, thanks so much, Michael. Really appreciate you having a chance to share the story.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at kocc.org. On Monday, you'll hear from another statewide office, that of Oregon's Attorney General, who is also fighting back against the Trump administration and what he says are illegal actions and orders. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.